And he shared how loving God with our mind, Kyle shared this, loving God with our mind ultimately doesn't come down to setting your mind on what you're going to do for God, but setting it on what he has already done for you. And then Rick last week shared about loving God with all our heart, which was also great. And I love the stories that he told. I think Rick tells great stories, a great storyteller. And loving God with your heart is loving with our emotions, our motivations, our passions, and to ultimately treasure what God treasures, to hold dear what God holds dear in our hearts. That's part of loving him with our hearts. And then he also asks us, what are we willing to sacrifice to love God from a deep heart? And today we're going to be focusing on what it means to love God with all our soul. And when I found out we were doing this series, I was really excited. I was like, oh, that's such a great concept, a great series to do. And then when I found out I was doing week 3, the soul, I'm not going to lie, I felt like I drew the sword straw. I was like, oh, great, I got the most abstract one. Awesome. The only phrase that came to me, I was like, how do we even talk about the soul in our culture? I was like, the windows are the eyes to the soul. I was like, what does that even mean? How is that useful? Great. What am I supposed to do with that? So Kyle actually suggested this Bible Project video that talks about this word specifically in the Old Testament, nefesh, for soul. It was so good. It was so eye-opening to me. I was like, oh, man, I don't know if I've been interpreting that word well. So we're all learning together, right, in this series. So we're going to actually watch it now. I just thought it was so good and so helpful, and it kind of encapsulates and says in a short period of time what would take me longer to say. So here you go. Watch this. Enjoy.
For thousands of years, every morning and evening, Jewish people have prayed these well-known words as a way of expressing their devotion to God. They're called the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. And as for you, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength.
We're going to look at the word soul. The Hebrew word is nefesh. It occurs over 700 times in the Old Testament. The common English translation of this word is soul, and that's kind of unfortunate. Here's why. The English word soul comes with lots of baggage from ancient Greek philosophy. It's the idea that the soul is a non-physical, immortal essence of a person that's contained or trapped in their body to be released at death. It's a ghost in the machine kind of idea. This notion is totally foreign to the Bible. It's not at all what nefesh means in biblical Hebrew. The most basic meaning of nefesh is throat. Like when the Israelites are wandering in the wilderness, they're hungry and thirsty, and they say to God, "We missed the cucumbers and melons we had in Egypt. Now our nefesh has dried up." Or when Joseph was hauled off into slavery in Egypt, his nefesh was put into iron shackles. But nefesh doesn't only mean throat. Since your whole life and body depend on what comes in and out of your throat, nefesh could also be used to refer to the whole person. Like in Genesis, there were 33 nefesh in Jacob's family, that is, 33 people. In the Torah, a murderer is called a nefesh slayer, and a kidnapper is called a nefesh thief. On the first pages of the Bible, both humans and animals are called a living nefesh, and if the life breath has left a human or animal, the nefesh remains. It's just called a dead nefesh, that is, a corpse. So, in the Bible, people don't have a nefesh. Rather, they are a nefesh, a living, breathing, physical being. Now, that might surprise you, because most people assume the Bible says the soul is what survives apart from the body after death. And while the biblical authors do have a concept of people existing after death, waiting for their resurrection, they rarely talk about it. And when they do, they don't use the word nefesh. So even though nefesh is often translated as soul, the Hebrew word really refers to the whole human as a living physical organism. In fact, this is why biblical people can often use this word to refer to themselves, and it gets translated me or I. Like in Psalm 119, most translations read, "Let me live that I may praise you." In Hebrew, the poet literally says, "Let my nefesh live that it may praise you." By using nefesh, the poet emphasizes that their entire being, their life and their body, offer thanks to God. In the Song of Songs, the young woman constantly refers to her lover as the one my nefesh loves. And of course, love isn't just an intellectual experience, it's an emotion that activates your whole body, your entire nefesh. This helps us understand the brilliance of other biblical poets who could combine multiple meanings of nefesh in one place. Like in Psalm 42, we read, "As the deer pants for the water, so my nefesh pants after you. My nefesh thirsts for the living God." So, on a physical level, your throat can be thirsty. like a deer's. But then that physical thirst can become a metaphor for how your whole physical being longs to know and be known by your creator. Which brings us all the way back to the Shema. To love God with all of your nefesh means to devote your whole physical existence to your creator, the one who granted us these amazing bodies in the first place. It's about offering your entire being with all of its capabilities and limitations in the effort to love God and to love your neighbor as yourself. And that's the Hebrew word for soul.
Yeah, you can clap for that. It's good. The Bio Project does some really good stuff. Highly encourage you to check it out if you haven't before. They've got all kinds of great videos. Great introduction, right, to our series. Let me pray. Ask the Lord to bless the rest of our time. Jesus, thank you so much for your word, for the richness, for the depth that there is in your word. I'm constantly learning so much, and I'm sure everyone else feels that same way, no matter how long I've been studying you or your word. I thank you for that, and I just pray, Lord, that you would help us, you'd give us wisdom in how to apply this. How do we love you with our whole being, our whole soul, Lord? Give us wisdom. In your name I pray. Amen. Okay, so we learned that loving God with your soul is basically loving God with all of your life, with all of you, with your whole being. And so you see this progression in the Shema. First is the call to love God with all your heart and mind, your inner life. And then the ante is kind of upped, right? It's kind of like putting your chips all in at that point, if you will. You see a little play on words I did there? We're called to love God with our whole being. Our nefesh is that next progression. So what you take in and what comes out of you, kind of that picture of the throat. When I first watched it, I was like, oh man, if soul means throat, I've been really missing it this whole time. So it gets a little deeper than that, right? But it also has to do with what you watch, what you let into your mind, what you eat, how you eat, what you say, how you rest and sleep, how you treat your friends and loved ones, how you love the lowly and marginalized, how you spend your time. Basically, every single part of your life is encapsulated in this concept of love the Lord your God with all your soul. It's wild. It's a high bar, right? If we've been honest. So I want to take a look at this psalm that uses this word nefesh a few times, just for some insights and maybe some starting points for us. So if you've got a Bible, turn to Psalm 63, verse 1. If not, it'll be on the screen. I actually want to show this in two translations, one that's a little bit older and one that's the updated NIV, to show that I think some of these translators have watched this video from the Bible Project. They kind of updated this language, which I think is pretty cool. So Psalm 63, verse 1, this is in the NET, the start. O God, you are my God. I long for you. My soul thirsts for you. And it's kind of like that song that was mentioned in the video, right? About the deer panting and being thirsty and thirsting for God. My flesh yearns for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water. It could be a great description of our world at times, right? Yes, in the sanctuary I've seen you and witnessed your power and splendor, because experiencing your loyal love is better than life itself, and my lips praise you. For this reason, I will praise you while I live. In your name, I'll lift up my hands. As with choice meat, you satisfy my soul. Cool pictures, right? Now, let me show it to you in the NIV now. Same passage, just a little bit of an updated translation. It says, you, God, are my God. Earnestly I seek you. I, nefesh, thirst for you. My whole being longs for you. In a dry and parched land where there is no water, I've seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and your glory, because your love is better than life. My lips will glorify you. I will praise you as long as I live. And in your name, I will lift up my hands. I, nefesh, will be fully satisfied as with the richest of foods from you, God, is what's implied there. I love this. I love this picture of our whole being thirsting for God. And I think this is one of the secrets of life, in my opinion, because this world, compared to what God is offering, is a dry and parched land with no water. We have this God-sized hole in our beings that can only be filled by Him. So that's a key. That's a key part, I think, of life, is to recognize your whole being thirst that can only be fully satisfied by God. to recognize your whole being thirst is kind of what I named it, that can only be satisfied by God. And until we recognize that only God can fill that hole, that what we truly thirst for is Him, the God of the universe, the one who created heaven and earth, the Alpha and Omega, we're going to keep going to other things, idols, human medicine for divine ailments. Modern day examples, it's like too numerous to list, right? Binging on anything, food, social media, Netflix, being consumed with your own image, with money, with alcohol, popularity, friends, family, marriage, singleness. If you think that what your soul is thirsting for is something in that realm, and once you have it, you'll be happy, I've got some bad news for you. All those things end up leaving us short and disappointed. I kind of got sucked into this TV shows on Netflix this year. I was just trying to find something to kill some time with as I was waiting in our little one's room to fall asleep. So I came across the show The Flash, all right? And I got sucked in. It happened really fast. See what I did there? It's just really well written, really well done, and I really was enjoying it. But I found myself just kind of going to it anytime I felt a little pain. I want a little bit of escape or had a spare moment instead of going to the Bible or to God or connecting or talking with my wife. It was, maybe I can squeeze, a half hour to watch, a little bit more of this. And I got to the end and I was like, okay, it was okay. end of the first season. I didn't continue on. I watched the first episode of the next season because there was a cliffhanger, right, that they do at the end of every season. But I felt like God was saying, maybe pursue me in a little bit with a little bit more of your whole being instead. I'm not saying all shows are bad or anything along that. You can connect with people through TV shows or Netflix and all of that. But for me, I felt some conviction. I felt like God was shining a little bit of light on that. You see, we cannot love God with all our soul until we recognize that only He is worth all our soul's love. And once we recognize that, then we're free to pursue Him first and foremost for our true satisfaction. Our passage, Psalm 63, verse 6, continues, "On my bed I remember you." Think about that. It's just a great picture, a great challenge. What do you think about when you lay on your bed at night? I think of you through the watches of the night. When you can't sleep, what do you think about? He's talking about when they're staying up and watching, protecting the city. A little bit different for us. "Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. I, nefesh, cling to you. Your right hand upholds thee." My whole being clings to God. What a beautiful picture, right? So my challenge to you all and to myself is through all your life, cling to God with your all of life. Through all your life, through all the ups and downs of life, because there's so many ups and downs in relationship, in work, in our careers, in classes, in marriage, in family, whatever it might be. There's so many ups and downs. Will you cling to God through it all with your whole being, with all of yourself? Unless we do that, unless we cling to God with our whole being, our all of life, I think we begin to lose our way. We get lost very easily. Our lives can become chaotic, can become disordered. We try to do things in our own power, right? And we fall woefully short. We need something, someone bigger than us to order our lives, to help us. Think about this with parents and children, right? Like, their job is literally to put things in the child's mouth to sustain them, to help them live, to even make them lie down when it's time for them to rest. With our children, I have to teach them how to speak very often, kindly, to one another and others. Here's a picture of our third-born, Tommy, and myself. We were out in public, and he is feeling a little shy, so he just crawled up in my lap and just kind of clung to me, just for some comfort, for some safety, familiarity. It's just a cool picture of really what the Lord, as our Heavenly Father, wants to provide for us as well. I love that kind of childlikeness you can see with a young child. You know, when you feel uncertain or afraid, where do you run to? Who do you cling to? Just this week, oh gosh, this is so funny. I was like, I can't believe this is happening right now in this moment. I was watching him, and he was playing in our basement, and I was trying to get a little bit of time in the Word and in prayer, because it's just a hectic day. I try to do it in the morning normally before they get up, and often feel like that too a lot of times. But I was writing in my journal and praying a little bit, and he comes up to me, he stops playing what he's doing, he said, "What are you doing?" And he talks very emphatically. And I said, "Oh, I'm just praying right now." He's like, "No, you're not. You're writing." It's like, "Yeah, well, I'm writing my prayers out, son. Thanks for believing the best, but whatever." And he says, "Is there anything I can pray for you?" And he thinks for a second. He's 3 and a half. He goes, "Jesus." It's like, "All right, I'll pray for you and your relationship with Jesus. That's how I'll interpret what you just asked for." And then I said, "Is there anything else?" He says, "Jesus kissed me." He's like, "Okay, this is getting really cute here, really fast." It's like, "All right, just pray that Jesus, you know, can love you well and show his affection for you." And I was like, "All right, I'm going to ask one more time. Is there anything else?" "Jesus hugged me." It's like, "Okay. Me too, Tommy. Me too. That's all I want to." Oh, you get it. Just cuts through all of, you know, life's craziness. And it's like, oh, goodness. All right, that's like 1% of our interactions. They're not all like that. They're very different most of the time. But there's something he captured, even in his young mind, of, you know, there's something out there, something bigger than me. And I need it. Right? And that, oh gosh, it's so simple, right? It's just us too. We need Jesus so much. I need him so much every single day. And I lose sight of that often. And I need to remind myself, cling to him. Let go of everything else. Cling to him. Part of loving God with all our soul is allowing him in his ways to order our all of life. So where are things disordered in your life? Where is there some disorder in your life? Where do you feel like you're thinking things with your head, but haven't been able to sink deep into your heart yet? Where is there dissonance? Where is there disconnection? Where do you say yes, but inwardly you're saying no, or vice versa? Can you bring those things to God, to the God of order, and keep bringing them to him if you have been already for a while? And call upon his power. Will you bring order, God? Will you bring clarity here? Will you bring order to what feels disordered? I often feel this. Like, I know I ought to be doing this, but I don't want to do it, right? How often have you been in that spot? Just recently, and Sarah Marie mentioned this, our social justice partnership with Southeast Ann Arbor community there and the schools there, Scarlett Middle School in Mitchell. And we're trying to pilot a tutoring program there that they just started this year. And there's a group of U of M students from Circle K that come and tutor, and I've been starting to go about 2 months now, and the first few times were rough, okay, for me personally. It was hard. The students didn't seem like all that interested in being tutored. There was one time in particular, there was two students, they kept distracting each other, and one, I kept being like, "Hey, do you have anything you could be working on over here?" I didn't bring anything. I was like, "Nothing, like no homework whatsoever." "No." I was like, "Well, why did you come to the tutoring time?" But kept that to myself. You know, the other girl was trying to get some work done, and anyway, I just left going, "Oh, gosh, is this worth it? Like, am I making any difference? Should I keep doing this?" Just felt very, like, just chaotic and unsure, not to mention having my own insecurities come up and all of that, too, and decided just to pray and just ask the Lord, you know, what's going on here, and he just felt like he was just communicating to me, you know, "Nick, just keep at it. And so I did, and the past few times have been really sweet. I've made a fool of myself a few times and said things that get laughed at. I'm like, "All right, tough that out." But I've been able to help a few girls with their Spanish, with their Espanol, if you will. I took 3 years of Spanish in high school. It's coming back. And, just talking to a girl about really basic things, conjugating, you know, the verbs in Spanish. It's very different than the English language. And she was like, "Oh," and she was getting it. I felt like it was, "All right. This is why you want me to keep at it a little bit, Lord, just to make a little bit of difference in our community. I've heard it said that our lives are the sum of our yeses. And as we let God order our soul, we become people who can make decisions like with our heart, mind, and with our all of life, like walking in integrity of our beings, we're set free to live lives where our yes is yes and our no is no, as Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount. We're set free to live lives free of fear of making the wrong decision, right? How many times does that cost you something? Because we're walking with God and we're empowered by his love. You see, love reorders our lives and puts right what's wrong. So when you're feeling dissonance or indecision or disorder, ask yourself, what would it look like to love in this situation? What would it look like to love in this situation? The most important part of our lives are relationships, right? Like that's the most dear thing. That's the closest thing to God's heart as well. That's what he treasures most, relationships. That's what life is all about. You know, talk about eternal things that won't rust or dissolve or decay, as Rick talked about last week. It's people, right? It's relationships. And so when I say ask yourself what would love look like in this situation, I want to give a disclaimer, like love for others, yes. Also love for yourself. Because if you're just worrying about loving others, you can burn out really quickly. And love for God and love with all of myself. See if that helps. It's my one kind of practical for you today. And in that waiting, like when you feel like you're in between in a decision or in the wrestling, I just want to encourage you to continue to wait on God. Will you simply cling to him and just continue to love what he loves? Continue to follow his ways. I want to kind of end with a story. And I just want to give a little disclaimer. This might seem like an odd disclaimer, but just something that I felt like I was putting on my heart. And so in this story, it involves a boy who talks about his love of football, which I think is great. I really like football as well. But I just don't want to like reinforce negative gender stereotypes. It's okay if you don't love football as a guy. I think that's perfectly fine. It's all right if you do love football as a woman. I think that's great. Or don't as well. You know, some of my co-pastors love to cook. I think that's awesome and great. Not all guys do. I'm one of them. And I love to take my wife shopping also at the same time, which is kind of odd, I think, for a guy, I've heard or been told. You know, I just don't want to reinforce negative stereotypes or even just some of those gender stereotypes, because those things aren't in the Bible, right? Like, that's not like what it means to follow God as a man or as a woman. Those things are cultural things we can overlay in our lives and in our relationships. And I just don't want to do that. So disclaimer over. Here's the story. This is written in a book about a marriage and relationships and connection and the importance of fostering deep connection. Now, it's actually similar to the connection that children feel with their parents. That's the kind of adult fostering connections we need to make. And this is Kenneth Sandy telling some of his story, who's a counselor and co-authored this book. It says, the person who most influenced my view of God was my great aunt and caregiver, Auntie, with a capital A. Auntie lived in a small rundown garage apartment in town and depended on a small grove of pecan trees for most of her existence. I have vivid memories of working long, hard hours with her in her vegetable garden, the black gumbo soul of southeast Texas burning my bare feet. She rested only long enough to make lye soap in a black wash pot on an open fire in the shade. It was amazing to me that anything could be so poor and yet so happy. She had her faith, and that sustained her through thick and thin. It was my relationship with Auntie that forever formed my image of God and influenced my relationships with others. In Texas, football was king. As a boy, I spent every waking moment preparing for and fantasizing about playing football. I remember one fall night when I was about 12, walking home from an important game that my high school had won. I should have been happy, celebrating with the rest of the town. Car horns were honking, the band was playing, and fans were cheering. I'm kind of picturing this in a town in Texas. Sounds about right. But that wasn't the case. I had this sudden sick realization that the chances of my ever playing football weren't that good. I had the desire, but my body hadn't gotten the message. I was almost the smallest kid in town. I walked into Annie's house late that night, as disappointed as I'd ever been in my life. If I wasn't a football star, then I was nothing. I mean, fill in the blank there, right, for anything that, you know, we really want in our lives. We've all felt that way. I felt that way. If I can't have this or if I'm not this, then I feel like I'm nothing. When I entered the house, I saw Auntie half asleep on the couch, holding a transistor radio up to her hearing aid. Over her smudged glasses, she looked deep into my eyes and said, "You all beat, huh? You won." She didn't know or care a thing about football, but she had listened because she knew that the game was important to me. My sadness lifted almost instantly as I realized that winning the game wasn't the point. I mattered to her, and she cared about what was in my heart, and that's what counted. She had held on to that radio all evening, waiting to hear the final score, because she knew how much it meant to me. I'll never forget the way I felt as she looked into my eyes. It went straight to my heart. My disappointment was replaced by a sense of calm delight. This is what I would describe as a divine gaze of love. This experience changed me forever. It shaped the temple of how I see myself, my God, my wife, my family, and others. God created us for connection, intimate connection. Think about that. Like when someone you know, someone you love, takes a genuine interest in something you love, it's amazing, isn't it? Right? And this is the gospel as well. Jesus entered into our lives, took an interest in us, in each and every one of us. Our brokenness, our sin, and our hopes and our dreams as well, and made a way for us to be completely forgiven through his death on the cross, for us to have our lives truly and eternally ordered through his life and blood, to see many of our dreams of love and hope and meaning fulfilled, and to have our ultimate soul, our ultimate whole being, dream and desire of being with the lover of our souls forever after we die, sealed for all of eternity. And that begins in this life. I just think about this week. Our God is, he's not just good. He is beyond good. Beyond good. He alone is the medicine for our divine ailment. He alone can quench our thirst, our deep soul thirst. Let us drink deeply of him over and over and over again. Dear Jesus, I thank you so much for all that you've done in our lives. I thank you for your deep love. Let us respond to your love, to what you've done for us with all our love, with our whole beings. Give us wisdom on how to do that well, day in and day out. And I know you're so gracious when we fall short as well, because that's the essence of who you are. That's why you died for us, to show us grace to begin with. We love you. We worship you. We give our whole selves to you. In your name I pray. Amen.